Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. Keith MacDonald is well known in this country for being one of the early advocates of streamer fishing, and his many incredible catches are a testament to his skills and use of the tactic. And having seen his pictures of 20-pound sea trout from a recent trip to Iceland, we had to get him on the show to talk about the trip and the experience, and also to find out how the 2022 season went for him. We'll hear from Keith in a moment, but it's hard to put into words just the incredible fish that Keith caught over there in Iceland.
Yeah, Dara. Wow. I mean, when I saw the picture, it was just wow. I mean, that was the only thing you could say. I mean, I wouldn't say prehistoric, but just something amazing about it. Like it was that color. It was fierce looking. It was just fantastic. A double figure sea trout would be most people's fish of a lifetime. But to get one over 20, I mean, that is just, it was just phenomenal. It was great to get to talk to him about it. Really was. And interesting in the method he caught it on, because I was stumped because I was certain it was going to be, you know, it was Keith MacDonald. What else would it be? Well, it just goes to show, you know. He had to resort to the conditions that were put to him.
And the other thing as well is it was interesting. It was tough fishing, no surprise. You wouldn't want 22-pound sea trout to be easy now, fairness.
Yeah, yeah. And if they were...
we'd all be over there.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it just meant, like, as he was saying, he gave us the number of takes he had for the day and the conversions, and it was tough fishing. It was, like, really tough fishing. But then, you know, if you're going to get fish... of that quality. I mean, to put it into an Irish perspective, it's why people, you know, quite often will spend a day on Sheelan. You know, Sheelan isn't renowned as a free rising lake at all, but they will put up, you know, with putting a lot of time into it, because, you know, that next fish could be the best brown trout you have in your life. And with Keith there, that next fish at one stage turned out to be the sea trout of a lifetime.
Yeah, it's, I'd recommend anybody just get onto Instagram or onto the streamerfishing.com. You'll see the pictures. It was like the dark black colors, the size of it. It was just looked like it was just.
I don't want to, because I just don't want to say it was scary. It was just.
Yeah. I was going to say it was scary.
Yeah, it was just wow.
Angry.
Angry. Yeah, angry. The fish was angry looking. It should be.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, tell me this, streamer fishing, do you do much of it?
Yeah, I do, actually. I would do a bit of it, but I suppose it wouldn't be... I would use streamers such that I would use minkies, humonguses. Like, I know Keith is a great man for the articulated streamer, when you look at that, and he ties a lot of them. I don't think they're of any great advantage in still waters. But I've yet, you know, I'm still early enough in my lure fishing to, you know, I might change in that, but I have tried them a couple of times. I think articulated ones come in better when there's a flow. They fall as such. But I should try them more. Yeah, I do quite a bit. And I think it's a genre of the sport that's probably ignored a lot. And a lot of our lakes now have a lot more fry in them and fry feeders, I think it's something that we should concentrate a lot more on. Keith has really put it to the fore. And I said that to him as well. I say one time was I had a client out, and you know, they opened their box, showed me, and they picked out this fantastic extreme, and they go, it's one of Keith MacDonald's. I think there's a lot more scope for it on Stillwater.
Is there a bit of snobbishness to it?
Of course, there's a bit of snobbishness to everything in fly fishing.
So with lures and lakes.
But yeah, I'll chuck it. I'll chuck it. Tug's the drug. You know, the tug's the drug. There's snobbishness by dry fly anglers toward wet fly anglers, you know? Sure. And, you know, I mean, I suppose wet fly anglers can now get their own back on lure anglers.
So in the hierarchy of the chain, you've got dry fly, wet fly, and at the bottom, are we talking about the bottom feeders or the streamer, the lure fishing? Keith.
There will be. I don't care. I'll try it. Oh yeah.
Well, right, I tell you, if you're to show anybody a picture of a double figure sea trout and said the only way you're going to catch it is on streamer, I'd say most people would go, I'll have a go. Think
the amount of people who would go, no, I'll pass on that, will be very, very few. Very few. Yeah. They might to beforehand, but I think at the end of the day, they'd be chucking a streamer too, or whatever it was. Listen and you find out.
Yeah, exactly. And also, we talked to Keith as well, not just about Iceland, but about his 2022 season. Some interesting insights there in terms of kind of difficult conditions in the summer, and then kind of what worked for him in different times of year when that was good for him. But I love chatting to Keith because he's so into the streamer and he's such an expert in that. Mm. And, you know, the results speak for themselves in it. And I think the way he's encouraged it as well, you know, he's really brought it on in terms of opening people's mind to, you know, the possibilities with it, and then also how to do it, you know. So he's a mine of information for that. Sure. Look, why don't we have a listen to Keith now? And Tom, you first asked him about the fly he caught the 22 pounder on.
Small jig head fly. I mean, I went armed with huge stuff. You know, because the guide is really into streamer fishing. So I'd spent, you know, literally since March having every eventuality covered.
Yeah.
But we didn't get the, we were hoping for, you know, proper filthy streamer conditions, and we didn't get them. The river was clear and low. So
they had the same lack of water that we've had here.
Yeah. So we had to finesse it a lot, you know.
So all these big, massive streamers that you prepared, the big dirty streamers, didn't get to use them as much as you'd like.
Not as much as we'd like. I mean, we did get fish on them, but the bigger fish came to like hairy little rubber legs, a jig head type thing.
And the big lad you got actually was on a jig head. How are you fishing it?
Varying it, you know, you can throw it upstream, throw it cross stream, you know, just covering water with it, really.
And the big lad, how did he take it?
He took it on the drop as I cast it in. He took it on the drop and it tightened in and just took off. And I knew immediately he went upstream that it was, you know, what we were after, really. Just I never felt a fish a strong, you know, and it was just immediately obvious. It's an amazing experience.
This sea trout would have been big for that river.
Yeah,
it was big for the river.
I mean, the guide has got them. That one was 90 centimeters. The biggest one was 35 point something inches. So that's, you know, you're getting up to the biggest fish that are there. You know, there was one or two this year in Iceland in autumn now around 94 centimeters. In spring, Maris, our guide, he got one, you know, up in the late 90s, almost a meter long. I think it's hard to crack a meter. You know, that's an extreme giant. But you see, I think they're getting bigger over there. It seems to be just getting better and better in recent years, you know, having kept an eye on it. And anecdotally, they'll tell you that it's to do with catch and release, that traditionally the fish would have been very much a food fish and nothing would be put back, and that's changed. And because they're repeat spawners, that they're coming back every year bigger. So the guide reckoned those big fish, I got 189 and 190 centimeter fish that they're, you know, somewhere in the 10, 12 year old range. So,
would they've been season's best for the river, Keith?
They'd be up at the top end of it, yeah. It's what we went for. It's what, you know, why the guide stood out to me, because he was putting fish out on social media the last couple of seasons that are up in that range, and I thought I really have to go and try that. I've been to Iceland a few times. I've had some good fishing, I've had some really tough fishing, and you know, it's not a case that you buy your ticket, show up, and it happens. It's tough. So I really got lucky. You know, there is a certain amount of luck involved. There's absolutely no doubt about it. You know?
Tom, have you ever done Iceland, Tom?
No, never. It's on the big bucket list. You know, I don't know if you listen, Keith. We have two bucket lists here. We have the big bucket list, which is anything outside the Isle of Ireland. Then we have the small bucket list. No, not the actual size of the bucket. We just wanted to call it the small. So anyway, in the big bucket list, I have Iceland. So I'd love to go. How many times have you been?
I've been three times, all for trout. I think salmon fishing is probably a bit out of reach. I wouldn't be particularly interested in going there fishing for grills, but it's very, very expensive. I mean, the guys were saying a ticket on a half-decent river is in the order of, hundreds and, you know, 1,000, 1,500 euros a day. Wouldn't be crazy for salmon fishing in Iceland, you know. So anyway, they really know how to charge for fishing over there, but it is reasonably doable. And, you know, myself and Mick were saying, you know, that the accommodation and food was really good. Do you know? I mean, it was kind of 60 euros a night for accommodation, which you'd find it difficult to get that here now.
And even for Iceland, like, were you far from Reykjavik? Like, because Reykjavik's infamous for its price, isn't it?
Yeah, the first place we fished is about an hour outside Reykjavik, and then we went on, it was kind of 5 hours southeast of Reykjavik, maybe 4 hours.
So at least, so you were a bit far from the madding crowd, so at least it was cheaper in terms of accommodation and kind of that side of it. Like, is it very much kind of where you were, was kind of anglers, it was that kind of far from the mining crowd, as I said? Or
you don't come across too many anglers in Iceland on any of the trips. I mean, the first place that's an hour outside Reykjavik, we did meet some local guys, and it's a bead system, so it's the river is split into three, and it's a funny system, actually, because you get rotated every 2 hours, which is far too soon. You've only settled into fishing by the time you go. So we bumped into some local anglers, but other than that, I mean, you drive over river after river and don't see anybody.
From what I'm led to believe, though, quite a lot of the trout fishing is either inexpensive or actually free, Keith. Is that the case?
I don't know about free. I think you probably could go and bang on a door and say, do you mind if I go fishing? I haven't tried that. There are some cheaper options, certainly. Like they have an annual ticket that allows you to fish something like 80 lakes. And the lake fishing can be really good and a good average size of fish.
And come here, did you get that ticket going over there to cover you?
No.
Because you were going to the guide, you were sorted?
Because we were going to the guide, we were sorted. And then we booked one other river, just that Mick had been there before and he'd had good fishing on it. So we went back to try that again. So it's about doing a bit of research, really, which can be tricky in some sense because it's a foreign language. But the Reykjavik Angling Club have a great website. Basically, they have control over a large number of rivers around the country, and you can book that in advance. So the one you see coming up regularly is the Big Laxa, where they have the great dry fly fishing. That's controlled by the Reykjavik Canyon Club, and you can book that in advance. So that's a useful place to go.
And would you recommend that? Like, because like you said, from my impression of Iceland was, you know, very expensive fishing, you know how to milk it, so to speak.
Yeah.
But from what you're saying, Keith, there's a real, you know, just put a bit of time and effort before. You can actually do it DIY. You can get good fishing at a good price if you just do a little bit of research beforehand.
Yeah, for sure you can. I mean, the sea trout trip wasn't the sea trout fishing with the guide wasn't cheap, but obviously, you know, you're paying for somebody for a day, so, but it was doable. I mean,
yourself and Mick booked the guide between you.
Yeah.
And then once you've that done, he arranges all the fishing from you. Did you tell him specifically what you wanted, or did he suggest things?
Yeah. I mean, he wouldn't even tell us the name of the river before we went. We had to trust him.
Right. Were you blindfolded and put into the back of the Jeep?
I'd been talking to him for a while, and he was 100%. You know, we knew it was the real thing. So it was just, you know, I guess he has to protect his business, you know, as best he can. Get so many people on the internet going, you know, where did you catch that? Where did you catch that? He gets the same, you know, so...
I believe you'd even have podcast interviews asking you that.
Yeah.
The members exclusive version. You have to pay $100.
Oh, yeah.
So just in case anyone's under the impression, I don't think they're under the impression maybe from hearing you talk about it, Keith, it wasn't as if you just rocked up, cast your heart's content and caught as many big fish as you wanted. One might get a different impression looking at your Instagram feed, but from all the looks that were. But, and I'd recommend if anybody reads your blog post on, give us the URL, Keith.
It's streamerfishing.com is the website. Yeah. And if you go to the news and blog, there's, you know, the latest posts we put up.
Yeah. And it's well worth reading because it's interesting and fairness. Yeah. Yourself and your friend Mick went over there. You caught a couple of lunkers, and your friend Mick, highly accomplished angler, he struggled over the few days. And it was just really interesting to read that kind of juxtaposition of there was you and there was him, you know. But as you said, he kept at it and he got his reward in the end, though.
Yeah, he got it in the end. And look, Mick won't mind me saying, it really was, there was distance casts involved, and that really made the difference for me, that I was able to get the distance, required distance.
I was actually going to ask that before you actually said that, because sometimes I even see it on a boat as a guide. Sometimes there is no difference and luck can go the way, but sometimes there is just a small little difference why one rod will catch more than the other. And you put it down that your ability just to get that extra bit of distance helped you.
There's absolutely no doubt about it. And I mean, I got cut out like that once before. It's how I ended up getting really into the casting, because I said, that's never going to happen to me again, you know? So, but in fairness to Mick, he did it. He got it done in the end, and he fished hard,
and he got a reward.
He got the reward. Yeah.
He got a reward. Just a rundown again. Like, what were you talking there? Like, when you're targeting bigger fish, as you were in this river, the sea trout, I presume you're not getting bucket loads of them in the day. So, you know, what are you talking? You know, are you talking certain amount of takes and just converting those takes into actual fish landed, or what? Like, was it lively? Were you moving fish? What was that river like?
It was really tough. It was two to three takes a day.
Right.
So we were there 3 days. On 2 days, I got two takes a day and got the fish. Well, let's say I got four fish in total, right, over the 3 days, and lost two. So it wasn't like they were, you know, they weren't. Yeah. Coming.
It was hard work for them.
It was obviously really hard work.
Yeah, it was hard work.
It's 2 weeks later and I'm still really tired from all the casting and fishing, you know, because we were just fishing nonstop, and that takes its toll on you. And I hadn't fished for 6 weeks before that because of the low water. I just stopped fishing, you know.
If you were faring similar to Mick had been over the few days, and if you had done kind of similar to Mick, you know, how would you have looked back on your time at Iceland? Would you still have looked back on it as, God, it was great fishing and I'd go back again? Or would you have looked on it slightly differently?
I think just having a goal, you know, we said before we left, if we got a double figure fish, we'd be really, we'd call it a success. And I've been to, I went to pink fella batting the big trout lake in spring for a week, one April, and the fish were out at 50 metres. So the vast majority of the time, you just couldn't get a fish. So I know I've been there and it can be really, really frustrating. But if, you know, if ultimately, if you get a fish and get what you went for, and look, it's not all about the fishing. We had super fun, you know, and enjoyed the scenery and the people and all of that stuff. So, you know, I call it a success for sure. Yeah.
Would you go back? Or like, if you got it on your plans to go back in 23, 24? Like?
I'd really like to go back next year, but it just depends. And, you know, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. But I mean, if we have a summer like we had this year with no water again, you'd be dying
to get back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just, you brought it up there, and a lot of people would be sort of aware of it. The other day, Pingavallen, is that how do you pronounce it?
I'll try my best. So most people say Tingvellir, like Tingvellir.
Because that's the one we see a lot of it online and social media. I think one of the outfitters has one of the beats on it where a lot of the big fish are caught, isn't it?
That's right. So, yeah.
Like the rest of the lake, while it does hold fish, this beat is quite the prime beat in it. Were you on that beat? And like, and also, did you fish any other part of the lake?
So on a previous trip, I went with Kieran O'Kelly, and we fished one of those hot spots. Now, it's not the... So on the south end of the lake, there are three main hot spots. One is where there's kind of hot water springs going into a bay, and then there are two streams. Basically, the way I understand it is that these big trout go out into the lake and they feed on Arctic char. And because the water is that big bit warmer in these streams and hot water springs, it increases their metabolism. They digest the fish. They come in to digest the fish, basically, and head back off. So it's kind of a funny one in that, you know, when I was there with Kieran, he caught I think it was a 12 or 13 pound trout on a size 14 clinkhammer. Do you know? And it's mad. So you have had all these fish stacked up in the current going into the lake, huge fish, but they switch on for a very short period of time. And so then on the other end of the lake, you've got the national park. You can fish that on the national fishing license that I mentioned. It's about 80 quid, I think. And that's just real perseverance, you know, because you're looking at, you know, it'd be like going along the shore of Loch Garvan and spending the day casting. You know, you might bump into one eventually, but
you could be lucky. So
that's quite tough. And then there's a couple of other beats that are, you know, they can be successful at different times of the year. The most expensive ones are they're run by the Ion Hotel, and I'm not sure what price they were this year, but they're very expensive.
Yeah, they're not cheap. So having tried both, let's say the name that we find, the Thingy Lake, the Thingavallen Lake, and the sea trout. You'd go back again for the sea trout. Would you go back to Thingavallen?
No, I wouldn't. I just like moving water, you know, fishing rivers, really. I think that's the most important part. I mean, I really wanted to go and catch one of these big silver ice age trout from the lake. We got some medium sized one, and they're strong and they're fun. But you're kind of limited in that you're stuck in one spot, do you know? And it's nice to fish, you know, variations, different water types, and keeps you interested.
Well, I'd say if anybody's seen the pictures, check out Keith's Instagram feed. It's Jesus, I can't. What did you call them again? The, like, prehistoric kind of dinosaur type.
The Thingelier ones, they call them Ice Age trout. They actually say that they're, I don't know why, but the fishery scientists say they're Irish sea trout that got landlocked in the lake. It'd be interesting to know more about that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
If you looked at a carb trout and the spot pattern, some of them are very simple.
Are very similar. I have looked at a lot of pictures of them. Mm. I'll hold my hands up. Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
They do, actually. They look fantastic. Yeah.
But that sea trout fishery is really interesting. The southeast of Iceland, they have these huge braided rivers, and the sea trout fisheries for much of the year. And you know, I've seen quite a number of people say, "Oh, well, you know, like in spring that the guys are fishing for them." But the fish actually seem to live in these big estuaries year round, you know, that they're not fishing for kelts per se. Do you know? They're fishing
right.
for
yeah.
fish. Now, obviously, when we were there in September, the fish were coming in. They're there to spawn, ultimately.
Has there been, actually, just while we're on about them, has there been any research done now that there's good numbers of them? How many, like, would they have any idea how many times that fish you caught, how many times that spawned? Has there been research like that done on them?
Not
I
sure.
mean, they're all multi-spawners, I presume, naturally. Yeah. But
I know they can spawn a good number of times. Mm. I'm not sure exactly what the figures are.
We might bring it back closer to home, Keith, because you mentioned, obviously, just in terms of the low water for yourself. How did the season fare for you? Maybe give us a quick run through from start, middle to end.
Sure. Well, I was lucky. My season started earlier. I had a second trip. My brother lives in Slovenia, so I went fishing for huko, which is the Danube salmon, in February. And I was just recovering from COVID then, so it was a struggle. You've got the kind of 11, 12 weight rods and 10 inches a second sinking lines. It's a big predatory trout in the tributaries of the Danube River. So I managed to get one of those fishing with Rock Lustrup. He's a great guy over in Slovenia. I fished with him a good few times. And they're just, you know, if you're into streamer fishing or even pike fly fishing, they're great fish to try for. Their season for huko is our close season, so it's good. So that was the start in February, and then I had better than normal fishing for trout in March and April. I think the water temperature, I think anyway, in spring, the water temperature is the differentiator in terms of me having success with the way I like to fish, with the pulling the streamers and that sort of stuff. So this year was a bit better. I had some spring salmon fishing as well with the streamer, which was really cool. We put a post up on that, on the streamer fishing thing as well. One fish was 18 pounds fresh fish. It's really my PB. So that was a great start.
Where was that, Keith?
That's on the Slaney.
Okay.
The Slaney appeared to have some good size fish running in spring this year. So that was on the lower end of the river. Mick, my buddy, fishes. He lives around that direction, so we fished together a good bit there in spring. And May, May was terrible, really. At the end of May, I decided to go and look at a new river. And on the second trip, I got a fish. It was 4.5, maybe a bit bigger, 4.5 pounds. So I was absolutely thrilled. It was as beautiful a fish as I've ever seen. So I knocked a bit of crack out of that river for a while, and had some good dry fly fishing in June. And that was really it. You know, I never got to get back at anything after that, because there was no water. A lot of the time I just couldn't fish. So, you know, there was ups and downs. I'd probably be in the horrors if I hadn't had Iceland to look forward to the whole time. Yeah. No, 'cause I was just going, oh, well, it doesn't matter. I'll be going over there. But it was pretty grim, you know. Like the River Boyne, which I like to fish, it really didn't get a flood since spring, you know. Bad shape. Some rivers, some of the photos I saw were really scary.
Would you be tempted to go lakes, or, you know what I mean, look, you know, to try find some water, like, for you?
Yeah, I fish lakes occasionally, a couple of times, but as I was saying, I like to fish to features, and I suppose I think just the longer I'm fishing, the more I just like to fish the way I fish, and that's it. And it's really good.
You like your rivers, yeah. And you like fishing on rivers. I can actually understand that fully. I like rivers as well, but like, I am more of a lake man.
Yeah,
you know, I do get to fish rivers, and I do like them. Don't get me wrong, but I suppose I'm more accustomed to lakes. That's why I look at Thingivallen more than the sea trout ones. But yeah, I'd see what you do, and I think if you find yourself, you have to go to lakes for the rivers not been there, you'll suddenly see like this is a substitute.
Yeah.
It's one thing going to a lake when you know, well, you know, if this isn't on, I can always go back to the river tomorrow evening.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. When you have to resort to it as a substitute. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I mean, dry fly fishing on the lake is fantastic when you got the conditions. But for me, being in Dublin, if I make the spin, you know, and organize a boat and drag the engine out and the whole lot, and you can go out and then the wind blows up in the evening and you're goosed, you know, you've nothing. So you can go to a lot of effort for, you know, and then have to pack up and go home at all hours with young family at home and all that. You know, the other thing, I mean, I had a couple of hairy moments in boats. One time in Curran, a big water spout came across and nearly threw me in. And you kind of see your own mortality, you know, particularly with the kids. You kind of like, you know, I know that, I mean, there's risks on rivers as well. But what I do love doing is the spring salmon on Carramore. That's super fun.
Would you fish traditional wets, or would you give the streamers a go on the Carramore? Yeah.
Nothing on the streamers there as well, yet.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, would you work, and Tom as well, yourself, we're going to see a lot more drought conditions, and we are seeing a lot more drought conditions. And we're getting a taste of, I think, what lies ahead. You know, I know it's here, but it's like we still kind of don't accept as if it's going to be the new normal. Does that worry you?
It does greatly, yeah. Really does worry me. I mean, there's nothing I love more than, you know, seeing it rain, absolutely pump rain. It gets me excited and I want to go fishing, and you go to the river and the river is flying down, and, you know, that's what gets trout and salmon excited. They love it, and they become aggressive and they want to pull flies. And I mean, if you're not seeing that, then, I mean, you know, you can, of course, you can go get the nice evenings for dry fly, but you have to have the other bit too. Yeah, it's a bit scary.
So you went to Iceland, remind me, this September, was it?
Yeah.
So pretty much before that, you had been fishing really since...
I didn't really fish in August at all.
Didn't fish. And interesting, going back there, you found May a disaster. Why do you think?
Well, because you didn't have conditions for dry fly fishing and you didn't have conditions for streamer fishing. There was no water and there was, you know, cold north winds and it was just...
I mean, there's a big correlation between lakes and rivers there straight away. You know, we were the same. We had no fresh water to freshen up the lakes. Lakes started losing the water, which isn't as big a problem, of course, as it would be to a stream. But the northeast cold winds do not help things. And where they don't happen with us in the lake is they mightn't actually affect the trout, but they'll affect the trout's food source, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Mm. The highlights of yourself for your season was in the Danube and Iceland.
Irish trout is glaringly missing.
Yeah, so June, I had quite a number of good fish. I had 1.6 and 1.6 and a quarter on the dry fly and a couple of fives and twos and threes. So, yeah, that June, I did get some good dry fly fishing. Yeah, so my buddy Kieran, he texted me the other day when he was doing his tally, Kieran O'Kelly, a fish with a Melodic, great angler. He's had 20 fish over 3 pounds on 5 different river systems. So that's quite an achievement, I think, for Irish fishing.
That's really good. And you've also found a new river.
Yeah, which is really got me excited about spring. So something that a river that I didn't know was worthwhile, is potentially...
Isn't that great? Isn't that great that you found something? You know,
I'm really surprised, isn't it? Like, you would have thought in this day and age, with all the information going on everywhere that's so easily shareable and accessible, that to come across still.
No, it's brilliant. There's so much stuff going on there that doesn't even go on social media. I mean, I had a guy get in touch with me who had got a double figure trout on the river, saw the picture, the whole lot on the dry fly this year. So,
That's fantastic, but in a way, it's kind of reassuring that everything goes onto social media.
Yeah, no,
it's great that there's a certain amount of I'll use the word secrets. We all, your secret place or secret location or secret spot. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
it really is. That all comes from you saying that you found a new place, and like, you've done loads of river fishing. Gone all over the place, and for you now, just this year, to find a new place, I just think that's brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting and encouraging, because I did feel that I was stuck in going to the same old places for the last couple of seasons. So it's great to feel that way, that you can still go and explore, because there's no end of water to be explored, and to go to the second time to this river and get a fish, 4 pound plus, 4.5 pound trout. It just shows that there's stuff out there.
Stop relying on social media, people. Get out there.
You have to go and look for it yourself.
100%.
And even if you look at the old books for some of these places, they don't have the information in them either. They are not aware that the fish are there.
Yeah, 100%. And Keith, I was going to say, for people, keep an eye on streamerfishing.com in terms of your blog posts. Some great pictures, some great articles go up there. And it's all part of the company Impact Fly Fishing that you guys do. You're specialized in streamer fishing. How's that going? Because it's great to see a new brand like that that's focusing in on a specific area like that. And some people would say relatively new, but I know you've been doing this years. But are you seeing kind of more of an uptake and an interest from people kind of going, I might try my hand at that streamer fishing?
Yeah, definitely. And thanks. It's been great fun to do it. We did it, set it up over COVID. We're just trying to grow it slowly, hopefully, and add bits and pieces in as we go. So we focused on the flies initially. And I've been tinkering with a rod for a while. That's, hopefully that'll come to fruition in the near future. And yeah, it's really just focusing on the thing we like to do and sharing the information. And, you know, for me, it's kind of the creative aspect of it, the photographs and writing a bit about stuff and the flies and just putting across the kind of fishing that we like to do. Yeah, it's good fun.
It's really great. And I really think that the blog and everything is good. And I think you'd be to commend it as well, Keith, because I think you really pushed streamer fishing out there and opened it up to a lot of guys, which has been really good for the sport. It's another avenue. And like, you really played a huge part in that. So I said, thanks. Fair play to you.
Appreciate it.
I do recommend the flies. I bought myself a present last Christmas, I think it was. And in fairness, you guys did it was a packet, like where you get the, I think it was the tippet and the leaders and the flies. So I got myself all set up, ready to go to do it. Like,
how does your Chris Kindle work? Sorry, I got me again.
So what I do every year, right? The kid, Santa's obviously coach to the kids. Wife is ticked off the list, and then I'm next. I go, right, what can I get myself?
Streamers.
Because I can always open something up on Christmas Day that I've got.
Well, you know what the coolest thing about it is, when somebody takes the flies and you give them a bit of information, and then they come back one morning with a photograph in your email of something exceptional that happened to them. And that's happened a few times recently, and it makes my day. It's just fantastic, you know.
Remind people of the URL, Keith, and what they can get.
It's streamerfishing.com, and we've got, you know, streamers and sundries. If you, the right tippet, for example, is really important, because the amount of times people have got on to me over the years and said, well, how do I start? And I say, well, go and get a conehead woolly bugger and make sure you use really heavy nylon. And they come back and they say, yeah, I got the woolly bugger and left it in somebody's mouth on 6 or 8 pound line. You wouldn't believe the number of times that it's happened. So you got to have the right setup, because they hit the fly quite hard, and, you know, you've got to be able to absorb the shock and hang on to them. So yeah, all those bits and pieces. And, you know, there's a plan to that. The next question that I always get asked is what lines. So we hope to have a line in place, and the rod, we've done three prototypes at this stage. So I think we're pretty close, and it worked on a 22-pound sea trout, so I'm happy enough with that.
It passed the test. Well, yeah. I definitely recommend it. And like I said, there's some great blog posts there, which is great information for people that do want to find out, that are looking to start or just find out some more information about it. Highly recommend it. Yeah. Final question to you, Keith. What was your most memorable fish?
Prior to the conversation that we've had, I was thinking about a good thing, but one that really stood out, I'd say early 2000s. Up until then, I probably hadn't traveled too far. So I fished the Dodder a lot, and I had a little stream rod for the Dodder. But anyway, I decided, for whatever reason, I'd book into Pontoon Bridge Hotel and get a ghillie and go fishing on Loch Conn. So I had a go anyway, and the ghillie was Vinnie O'Boyle. I don't know whether you know him or not, Tom. I don't think he's around any longer, but a lovely, lovely.
Yeah, I remember the name. Yeah.
He, and like most people, you know, he would have been into wet fly fishing. And I arrived with my little 8 foot four weight stream rod, 4 pound tippet, and a couple of little dry flies. And, so it was a really rough day, and we went out through big rollers, and I was kind of, you know, wondering what was going to happen. But this was all all I had, and I was determined that's what I was going to do. So anyway, we weren't at it that long, and I dropped the little cling camera out onto this big roller, and the big beak came through, took the fly on the way up and went down, and he was over 4 pounds. Like just absolutely screamed off. I had a tiny little really screamed off with it, and I got him. So that was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But finding those things happening again is quite
absolute rare. Class on your little stream rod.
Little stream rod, yeah. I just class. Didn't know what I was doing, really, did I?
Well, yeah. Didn't harm you, did it?
It was all I had. But yeah, it was a really memorable one that just, you know, gives you that really great feeling.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
The rest, they say, is history.
Yeah.
Well, Keith, congratulations on the season that's been, especially Iceland, in terms of the fish caught there. Some incredible, definitely recommend people to check out on Instagram. What's your Instagram, please, Keith?
McDonald Keith.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so I definitely recommend check it out there, because it's just to see, seeing is believing when you see these pictures. Like,
yeah, I feel really lucky to have had that experience, you know, because when you're wanting something like that to happen for a long time and it does, you know, it's brilliant.
And a great way to finish the season for you. Keith McDonald, continued success with Impact Fishing and streamerfishing.com for people to check it out. And thanks again for joining us. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again in 2023 to find out if some more lunkers that you end up catching.
Thanks, guys, and continued success to you.
Cheers, Keith. Thanks a million. Great to talk to you. Our thanks to Keith McDonald for joining us on the show. And don't forget to rate, review, and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com as well as on Instagram. And myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland.